This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. For more than three decades, up to a million people may have been exposed to contaminated water at the Marine base at Camp Lejeune. From as early as 1948 until the mid-1980s, water at the base was a toxic stew filled with chemicals from leaking fuel tanks and other industrial spills. These contaminants have been linked to a number of birth defects and cancers and affected former residents of the base in Jacksonville, North Carolina. But there are lesser-known parts of the story, and they are the subject of a new book by journalist Mike Magner. It's called A Trust Betrayed, The Untold Story of Camp Lejeune and the Poisoning of Generations of Marines and Their Families. It documents personal stories, and it looks into the ongoing concern that military leaders are still trying to downplay this contamination. Mike Magner is the managing editor of the National Journal Daily. Welcome, Mike. Good to talk with you.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here.
Good to be here with you as well. I should point out that it is our policy here at the request of the Marines and the officials at Camp Lejeune to pronounce it Camp Lejeune. You are free to pronounce it the way you want. I'm sure you do it the way it's most comfortable for me and the way I pronounced it all my life, but I am nothing if not obedient. And so you will hear me say Camp Lejeune. Give us a little of the background on this story. How did this contamination happen first?
Well, I think as a lot of people in North Carolina know, Camp Lejeune opened in 1941 to train Marines for the beach landings that they would be doing during World War II. And it was a perfect location for that, with 9 miles of beaches and vast forests and swamplands for battlefield training. And then after the war, Camp Lejeune grew into a massive base that was the headquarters, became the headquarters for the Marine Division in the entire eastern half of the country. It was expanded to the point where you could have 180,000 people or more on board at the same time. And as it grew, the Marine Corps was doing what just about all military bases and most industries were doing in the 1950s and 60s and 70s before the more stringent environmental laws came into effect. That is, they were dumping all of their wastes right on the land there. They were actually pouring used oil on the roads to keep the dust and sand down as the military vehicles moved through. They were burying chemical weapons and other toxic materials that were used on the base. They were dumping battery acid from their vehicles into pits. They were also using thousands and thousands of gallons of an industrial solvent called trichloroethylene, or TCE, to hose down engines and equipment to take the grease off, and basically letting that flow off into the storm drains and onto the land. There was a big fuel farm at the base as well, with hundreds of thousands of gallons of fuel stored underground. Those tanks were installed in the 40s and over time began to leak, and the hoses all leaked. And so there were thousands and thousands of gallons of fuel leaking into the groundwater. And on top of all of that, there was a dry cleaning establishment across from the most populated housing area at the base, Tarawa Terrace, that was leaking perchloroethylene, a kind of a sister solvent to TCE, into the ground, and it was going into the groundwater. And the tragic thing at Camp Lejeune is that in a coastal area like that, the soils are all very sandy, and anything you put on the ground filters right down into the groundwater. And they were using the most shallow aquifer for the drinking water at the base. They were pumping water out of it on a daily basis from about 100 wells. And there began to be warning signs that something was wrong with the water in the 60s, when there were hundreds of miscarriages and stillbirths on the base, or babies who died within weeks of their birth, or some cases a few years later when they developed cancer. Because the worst time for exposure to toxic chemicals is to a developing fetus in the womb. And many of the babies that were born at the base were the sons and daughters of Marines who were perhaps on deployment in Vietnam while their spouse stayed at the base waiting their return. So their mothers were drinking this contaminated water. But the real warning signs came in the late 1980, when the Army began testing for the Marines for chemicals that were being regulated now under the Safe Drinking Water Act. And when they did those tests, the lab results came back showing solvents in the water. And yet, for a number of years, the Marine Corps kind of ignored those warning signs. They argued that none of these chemicals were regulated yet by the EPA. which was partly true, but there was also truth in the fact that the Navy had its own regulations that prohibited toxic chemicals from being in their drinking water. And then finally, it wasn't until 1984 when there was a fuel leak directly into one of the water systems. And the chief of staff's wife in her housing smelled gasoline coming out of her tap water, that the Marine Corps was forced to flush out the systems and then test after they put the wells back on. And that is when they discovered levels of TCE and PCE and benzene and other chemicals in the water at levels thousands of times higher than what would be safe. There was, for example, one test at an elementary school in the tap water that had 1,400 parts per billion of TCE, and the safe level is considered by the EPA to be less than 5 parts per billion.
So this is now the mid-80s. What do they do when these test results come back?
Well, finally, that as a result of those tests, they shut down in 1985 10 wells that they found to be contaminated. There were about 100 wells overall on the base. But some of these wells were serving Tarawa Terrace, which is a very populated housing area, and a large part of the base near the industrial area called Hadnot Point. So finally, when they shut down these wells, it attracted the attention of the state of North Carolina and the EPA. And the base entirely was declared a Superfund site in 1989. And as a result of that, the cleanup began, but also it triggered a study that had to be done by the CDC, a division of the CDC called the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, where they have to look at whether this contamination that was discovered had affected any human beings and if there had been exposure to humans and harm done. And so that resulted in a study that was finally released in 1997 that showed, based on data from the base hospital, that there was a higher percentage than normal of low birth weights among children born at the base, which is a real sign of other possible health problems. So the ATSDR, part of the CDC, continued to do some follow-up surveys. And in 2002, they contacted more than 12,000 families at the base, who had lived at the base while the water was contaminated, they discovered that there were more than 100 cases among those families of childhood cancer or birth defects.
Well, I want to stop. It's quite a bit. But this is now increasing evidence. It mounts. There are more and more studies. The wells are shut down in the mid-80s. By the early 2000s, the CDC, not the Marines, the CDC are contacting Marine families. It is taking a long time for the word to get out. Here's where I want to bring in Marine Corps veteran Jerry Ensminger, who first heard about the contamination at Camp Lejeune years after a death in his family. He's a retired Marine Master Sergeant who'd become the catalyst for pushing the investigation forward, and he joins us now. Jerry Ensminger, welcome. Good to talk with you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You spent more than 11 years at Camp Lejeune with your family. Tell us about when you first heard the news about toxic substances at the base.
It was 3 years after I retired. I retired in July of 1994. In August of 1997, I was walking out of the kitchen with a plate of spaghetti to watch the evening news. And just so happened that week, the public health assessment, which ATSDR had written for the Camp Lejeune Superfund site.
ATSDR is an arm of the Centers for Disease Control. Am I right?
Yeah, that's the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry.
Right.
They had issued their report that week, the public health assessment. And luckily, one of the local TV stations had picked up on it and did a piece on it in the evening news. And when I came walking into the living room with my plate of spaghetti to sit down and watch the evening news, the reporter on the TV said that report had been released that week and that they wanted to take a look at all the children that had been born at Camp Lejeune because of the prevalence of these chemicals possibly causing childhood cancer, primarily leukemia. I dropped my plate of spaghetti on the living room floor. I mean, my daughter Janie was the only one of my four children to have either been conceived, carried, or born while we lived aboard Camp Lejeune. When Janie was 6 years old, she was diagnosed with leukemia. Janie suffered immensely for nearly 2.5 years prior to her death. We watched her die a little bit at a time. When Janie finally died, you know, anytime a parent has a child that's diagnosed with a catastrophic illness, after the shock of the diagnosis wears off, the first question, without exception, the first question any parent that's facing that asks is, why? Well, that nagging question stayed with me through her illness, through her death, and up until that point in time, I never dreamed that I would get an answer or even a possible answer, because this was only a possible answer. And, it was like, God opened the sky and said, Jerry, here is the possible answer to that question that had been nagging you up to, but to that point, it had been 14 and a half years.
It may have answered your question for you. What about the Marines when you brought your observation to them?
When I first started making contact with the Marine Corps, I immediately felt pushback, resistance. I was lied to by representatives of the Marine Corps and Department of the Navy. They told me that, there was no way this stuff was such minute and trace amounts that this couldn't have happened. They told me that ATSDR was blowing this all out of proportion. And, being a career Marine, I wanted to believe these people. But by the same token, I still stayed engaged. And as time went on and more documents became uncovered by my own efforts and by, back at that time, Tom Townsend was deeply involved in this. The documents which started coming to light proved that what they had told me previously was a lie. They were lying to me. They were lying to everybody. They lied to the public. We have newspaper articles from the period, from 1985, where the base environmental engineer, a man by the name of Robert Alexander, was interviewed by the Raleigh News and Observer. And in that article, he was quoted as saying that while some of these chemicals had leaked from the dump sites, no person had been directly exposed.
And all of this, of course, led to you, for you to a path of advocacy, and you became a kind of outspoken exponent of exposing this story. And part of that advocacy led to Mike Partain finding out about this. Mike Partain was born at Camp Lejeune. His family moved away when he was 6 months old, and he joins us now to tell us his story. Mike Partain, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. Up until April of 2007, Camp Lejeune was nothing more to me than a name on my birth certificate. My parents arrived at Lejeune in April of 1967, shortly after my father graduated from the United States Naval Academy. And I was born there in January of 1968. Things all changed for me in April of 2007 when I received a out-of-the-blue diagnosis of male breast cancer on my 18th wedding anniversary. And up until then, I'd been a healthy father of four and husband and, just enjoying my life and knew nothing about what had been going on at Lejeune. Jerry had been involved in this for 10 years prior to this. And during that 10-year period, nobody from the Marine Corps notified me or told me about what had happened at Camp Lejeune. I underwent a mastectomy, and about a month after my mastectomy, I was walking out of the doctor's office when I received a phone call from my father, and he asked me where I was and told me that I needed to get immediately home and turn on CNN because there was something about Camp Lejeune. I arrived home, turned on the TV, and I saw Jerry testifying in Congress talking about the children born at Lejeune between January of 1968 and December of 1985, and how they've been exposed to high levels of toxic chemicals in our drinking water. Well, my birthday is January 30th, 1968, and I realized right then and there I was one of those children. And shortly after that, I contacted Jerry. Actually, I called the congressman who was the chairman of the hearing and asked them to get me in contact with Jerry. And he called me actually the day I was to begin chemotherapy, and we had a discussion about Camp Lejeune. About 6 months later, Jerry and I started talking again after I'd finished my chemotherapy, and we started talking about Lejeune, and he talked about how Tom and him had gathered documents and had gotten access to a lot of the EPA files, Marine Corps files, and you know, I told Jerry that you know, I do investigative work and my degree's in history, and one of the things that I thought we could do good with would put a timeline together of what happened, and that timeline can be found on our website, The Few, the Proud, the Forgotten. But
I want to ask Mike Magner a question right now, Mike, because we heard Mike say that he was diagnosed with male breast cancer. How rare is that, and how common is it among those who were at Camp Lejeune over this period?
Oh, it's extremely rare. I believe less than 1% of the cases of breast cancer in this country are men. And what was remarkable, I think Mike can tell you more about this, but after he was diagnosed and heard about what happened at Camp Lejeune, he began through social media and also through newspaper articles, including one that was written about him down in Florida, to make contact with others who had been at Camp Lejeune, other men. And I think over time he discovered there were more than 80 cases of male breast cancer among men and women who had been there. And it's just way off the charts, in, you know, when you compare it to the population in general.
Well, I should point out at this point that we did invite the Marines to be represented on this program. They declined. They did send us a couple of statements, one of which I guess gets to why it took so long for them to respond to this. We asked about that and whether or not they felt that they were covering up. Their answer, quote, "Marine Corps actions regarding the historic drinking water issues at Camp Lejeune have been formally reviewed by three independent bodies, Commandant of the Marine Corps Fact-Finding Panel, Environmental Protection Agency Criminal Investigation Division, and the Government Accountability Office, I should say. None of these reviews yielded evidence of a cover-up or any violations of the Safe Water Act." Mike, as the author of this book, let me start with you. Are they off the hook on this? Did they do nothing wrong?
Well, all those investigations that they mentioned, one of them was done by the Marine Corps itself. I mean, they appointed people that were supposedly independent, but one of them was very well connected to the Marine Corps. In fact, all three of the panel members that started out doing that investigation were very closely connected. The EPA investigation that was mentioned, the investigator for that did recommend some charges be brought, but the Justice Department turned him down, said that the bar was too high to try to get a conviction. And basically, the charges that he was recommending were that they were trying to mislead about what had happened at Camp Lejeune. I think partly the Marine Corps has never acknowledged that it was negligent, because they realize how much is at stake here. If they are proven to be negligent in their environmental management at the base and in providing supposedly safe drinking water, they could face billions of dollars in liabilities. And because, you know, as a result of there were more than a million people eventually at the base during the time the water was contaminated. So there could be thousands of people.
Well, we're going to take a break and continue this conversation with retired Marine Master Sergeant Jerry Ensminger, Mike Partain, another important activist in the inquiry into Camp Lejeune's contamination, and Mike Magner, managing editor of the National Journal Daily and author of A Trust Betrayed. And our conversation will continue on the state of things after this. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Today, talking about contamination of the drinking water at Camp Lejeune. It took place over perhaps three decades. It took a long time for the Marines to do the testing, and even longer for them to contact the Marines who and their families who had been stationed there. I'm talking with retired Marine Master Sergeant Jerry Ensminger, whose daughter died at the age of 9 years old from leukemia. He was stationed at Lejeune. Mike Partain also was stationed there. He was diagnosed with male breast cancer. He's on the line with us, as is Mike Magner, managing editor at the National Journal Daily and author of A Trust Betrayed, The Untold Story of Camp Lejeune, The Poisoning of Generations of Marines and Their Families. So, Jerry Ensminger, tell us about your efforts to come to terms with the Marines.
Well, there's one thing, Frank, I'd like to point out and correct right now before it goes past too far. The Marine Corps statement that you just read is basically a lie. The investigating bodies that they said found nothing were never provided all of the internal documents that were later discovered. They were not provided with the Department of the Navy and Marine Corps' own regulations pertaining to water quality aboard their installations. Now, they like to come out and make the statement. When they first started making statements about the water contamination, their first statement was, we didn't violate any federal or state laws by allowing these chemicals in the finished drinking water. Later on, that message morphed, and it went to, we didn't violate any EPA or state regulations. And you've got to pay very close attention to what these people say. And the reason that they morphed that was because in 1950, Congress passed a law, and the president signed it into law, which allowed the Department of Defense to create their own judiciary system. It's known as a Uniform Code of Military Justice. And when that became law, their orders and directives and instructions became their laws.
Well, I'm going to
the UCMJ.
Mike Magner, let me ask you what the Marines told you about the delay in contacting. It wasn't until the 2000s that they even began to reach out to families, even after they closed the wells. What did they tell you about why it took so long to contact people who had been affected?
Well, they actually only started contacting after Congress ordered them to do so and the Defense Authorization Act. They argued that there was no real proof yet that there were health problems caused by contamination, and they would make the case that it's no sense in alarming people unduly if they are in all likelihood not been harmed. Of course, that proved to be later to be not really the case when some of these ATSDR studies began to come out and showed that there was a link between the drinking water and the contamination. So the Marine Corps, I think, basically they were driven by the fact that if they continue to expose people to this, they're going to increase their own liabilities. And really what the bottom line is that they were concerned about potentially costing themselves billions of dollars, the more information that got out about it.
Mike Partain, I think the CDC is still studying the link between the contamination and male breast cancer. But it has led to legislation that passed in 2012 that provides people with who may have been exposed at Camp Lejeune with health benefits. Can you tell us about that?
Well, in August of 2012, Jerry and I were at the White House as guests of the president while he signed the law that did provide health care for 15 specific conditions for both the Marines and their families stationed at Camp Lejeune. The health care part of the bill has been implemented, and as far as the service members go. But unfortunately, due to red tape and procedures, the health care portion of the bill for the families is yet to be implemented.
All right. What would you, and I'll ask you too, Jerry, what would you like to see happen?
Well, you know, number one, you got to get your foot in the door with any legislation. You got to be able to be willing to compromise. And we had to compromise on this bill. But my goal is to make Camp Lejeune, especially for the veterans, a presumptive disability where they will not only get their health care, but they will get the rest of their benefits, disability benefits, immediately, as you know, as long as they're diagnosed with one of these 15 ailments that's on the original law and any other ailments that were missed during that law.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Retired Master Sergeant Jerry Ensminger. Mike Partain is an activist and also a former Marine.
Actually, I'm not. I was born at the base.
You're born at the base, right. And Mike Magner is managing editor of National Journal Daily and author of the new book, A Trust Betrayed, The Untold Story of Camp Lejeune and the Poisoning of Generations of Marines and Their Families. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.